This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
House State Affairs will come to order. We'd like to welcome everybody that is listening on the internet. I hope you're having a great morning. I'd like to welcome everybody that is here this morning. We have a good turnout. I would ask that everyone is here if they would shut their cell phones off or mute them, that would be appropriate so that there's no interference and nobody has to pay any jerky fines. So everybody appreciates that. With that, I will ask the secretary to call the roll.
Representatives Anderson.
Here.
Dennert.
Here.
Diedrich. Goodwin.
Here.
Gosch.
Here.
Hansen.
Here.
Haugard excused. Jensen.
Here.
McCleary.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Beal.
Here.
Quam.
Here.
We have a quorum, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We have a quorum. I would ask for approval of the minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Minutes are approved. Okay, I would like to remind testifiers to sign in, make sure that any lobbyists are wearing the appropriate badges, and that all testimony and questions be run through the chair. With that, I would like to have the pages get up and introduce themselves.
Hello. My name is Grace Cook, and I will be attending SDSU next year to get a degree in animal science.
Great. Awesome.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Braden Key. I'm a senior at Harding County High School in Buffalo, South Dakota, and I'm going to NDSU next year to study pharmaceutical sciences.
Good enough. Sounds great. Okay, with that, are there any special introductions that need to be made? Anybody need a personal privilege for anything? Okay, we will get right into the calendar. I will let you know that 1167 is being deferred. We are not going to hear that one this morning, and it's probably going to be moved to a different committee. And then we will start with HCR 6003, supporting Electoral College, and then hear HJR 5001 after that. So with that, I will open up proponent testimony for HCR 6003, supporting the Electoral College. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Tina Mullally, District 35, Representative. Thank you, Board, for listening to me today. The Electoral College is a process, not a place. If it be not perfect, it is at least excellent. A quote from Alexander Hamilton, one of our founding fathers, in reference to the process. The founding fathers established the Electoral College in part as a compromise between the election of the president by a vote in Congress and the election of the president by the popular vote of qualified citizens. The Electoral College is fundamental to the American political process. It requires candidates to appeal to voters outside the large cities. Excuse me, I'm coming down on that crud everybody else is getting. It increases political influences in small states like South Dakota. It encourages the excess growth, or discourages the excess growth of political parties, and it makes the electoral outcome more legitimate than that of a nationwide popular vote. The Electoral College consists of 538 electors. The majority of 270 electoral votes is required to elect the president. The state's entitled allotment of electors equals the number of members in its congressional delegation, one for each member in the House plus two for your senator. According to Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2 of the United States Constitution, each state's legislature determines how the electors are chosen. Nearly all states allot all of their votes to the winning candidate in that state, no matter how close the candidates win. If not for the Electoral College, our country's leaders could be chosen only by states with the largest population, states like New York, California, Florida, and Texas, leaving the rest of the country with no voice. Since the Electoral College process is part of the original design of the United States Constitution, it would be necessary to pass a constitutional amendment to change the system. Let's proclaim that the Electoral College is supported by the House of Representatives of the 95th Legislature of the state of South Dakota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative. Is there any more proponent testimony?
Morning, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Linda Schauer, State Director for Concerned Women for America, LAC. We come to you in support of HCR 6003. It seems that following every presidential election, the debate surfaces concerning the Electoral College and the popular vote. But in recent years, the voices are getting louder and more adamant. Our form of government is a constitutional republic. The word democracy is not found in our Pledge of Allegiance or our Constitution. We elect people to make decisions in government for us. We can express our views, like I'm doing now, but in the end, those elected officials cast their vote. If we don't approve of their vote, we can elect someone else to take their place in the next election. The founders were careful to guard against a direct democracy or the majority rule because it doesn't protect the minority. The Electoral College is a safeguard against tyranny of the minority. Democracy is like two wolves and a sheep deciding what to have for dinner. With these ideals in mind, the founders brilliantly created the Electoral College, where we elect electors who vote for the president and vice president on our behalf. The founders intended the electors to be more astute regarding issues and qualifications of candidates and not swayed by biased media. The Electoral College compels candidates and political parties to focus on all regions and coalitions rather than on heavily populated states and certain groups of individuals. The national popular vote, on the other hand, would ensure that California and New York would elect the president, making South Dakota and other small states irrelevant. It would force our three South Dakota electors to vote for whoever wins the national popular vote. Under the popular vote system, a close election would require a nationwide recount, opening the door to fraud. However, the safer state-run election is monitored and held accountable by our county auditors and our Secretary of State. The Electoral College ensures that presidential elections are not federally controlled. Our Constitution is a brilliant document and needs to be obeyed, preserving our Republican form of government, our state's rights, and our liberties. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any more proponent testimony? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Meckler. I am the president of Convention of States Action. The Electoral College is something that I've written about and lectured about nationally. It is an important foundation of our system of governance. It is woven deeply into our Constitution. We are an organization that stands for all parts of the Constitution. It's a very important part of our federal system. And most specifically here in this state, the anti-Electoral College movement is intended to strip small states of their power. There's no reason that a state like this should give their power to elect a president over to states like California and New York. So I can tell you nationally, our organization is in support of this resolution and against removing the Electoral College. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Do we have any more proponent testimony? Good morning.
Good morning. Hello, my name is Alan Knipling, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of HCR 6003, a resolution in favor of the Electoral College. One of the many brilliant ways our founding fathers placed checks and balances within our constitutional form of government, we are a republic, which means rule of law as opposed to a democracy, which is ruled by majority. And the Electoral College is a fine example of the importance to a truly free society of the rule of law. It is a way to give all citizens of our country, no matter race, religion, wealth, occupation, or how they are situated in population, an equal voice. It protects the minority from the majority, which is exactly the danger of a democracy. Thank you so much to our founders for their wisdom and courage in what they gave us. And thank you to our present-day legislators and patriots who continue to understand and defend those rights and principles so beautifully expressed in our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution. I believe it is vital that we find a way to reintroduce good, solid constitutional education back into our schools so our younger generations can learn these principles. Our founding fathers were very emphatic that the powers of the federal government were few and defined. Obviously, the federal government has completely blown out of those restraints, and the movement to abolish the Electoral College is another avenue for them to really blow it wide open. If the election of the president was accomplished solely by national popular vote, it would dangerously increase the power of the executive branch of our federal government. Our founders were brilliant, and they knew history. They understood the dangers of the tyranny of the majority, and the Electoral College was one of the safeguards they placed within the framework of our Constitution to protect against just that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any more proponent testimony? Any more proponent testimony? Seeing none, do we have any opponent testimony? Any opponent testimony? Okay. Seeing none, I will... no need for rebuttal, so I will close that part out and ask for any questions. Any questions from anyone? Okay, I will close that part and ask for committee discussion and or action. Resident Gosh.
Second.
Moved by Gosh, seconded by Beal. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, I will have the secretary call the roll. All in favor say aye, opposed no.
Representatives Anderson.
Aye.
Dennert.
Aye.
Diedrich.
Aye.
Goodwin?
Aye.
Gosh?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Haugard excused. Jensen?
Aye.
McCleary?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Beal?
Aye.
Quam?
Aye.
12 ayes, 1 excused.
12 ayes.
HCR 6003 is passed onto the floor. I don't think we'll go consent. I would just soon have that you get up and present it. Thank you. With that, we will move on to HJR 5001 to apply for Convention of States under Article 5 of the Constitution of the United States to impose fiscal restraints on the federal government, to limit the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, and to limit the terms of office for federal officials and members of Congress. Is there any proponent testimony? Good morning,
Representative. Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Manny Steele, representative for District 12. I bring you HJR...
Just a second. I just want everybody to know there's 20 minutes for each side. So just to make that clear, I don't care how you divide it up, but it's 20 minutes for each side. So you may proceed. Thank you.
Thank you. Bring you HJR 5001. I'd like to share with you part of Article 5, which most of you are familiar with, but I want to... remind you one more by quoting the Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to the Constitution or, the second part, on the application of the legislature of two-thirds of several states shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intent and purposes, unquote. The founders of our country, who we give credit through their wisdom, wrote the Constitution, which does include Article 5. They knew from the history past democracies that this democracy would, from time to time, have to be amended. They created a method for both the federal government and the states to safely amend the Constitution. They also knew from all past democracies that the federal government over time would expand in power and influence. This has happened every single time in every democracy. So in their wisdom, they placed Article 5 in the Constitution to give states a solution to rein in the federal government. There are safeguards in the way Article 5 is written. There are safeguards in the way our bill is written. There are safeguards in our judicial system and safeguards in the extreme requirement of ratification by 38 states before anything can be passed by the Convention of States and become part of the Constitution. I ask for your yes vote on HJR 5001. Let's go forward the way the Constitution tells us to and begin to fix our federal government. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I will stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any more proponent testimony? Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Shirley Meyer. I'm a resident of South Dakota. And excuse me if my voice breaks up. I'm not used to talking in front of people, so I get a little scared. So just bear with me. I'm in favor of HJR 5001. I'm asking you to vote for it. And I'm going to give you some of the reasons why. This is the Constitution our founding fathers gave us. It's 39 pages long. But do you know we do not live under this Constitution? This is the one we live under. It was published in 2012. It'll be published again in 2022. It is almost 3,000 pages long. This is what they have added to our Constitution that we have to live under. I myself want to go back to this. And one of the ways we can do that is for the calling of a convention of states under Article 5 to propose amendments to our Constitution, like the ones we already have. Then I want you to know that in the state of South Dakota, I have a list here of districts and that of how many people want this that have signed our petition. And that we have over 5,171, and that was as of the 4th of February. I have printed them off. And I can tell you, yesterday when I went home and got on the computer, we had 16 more petitions signed. So this is not totally accurate. It's more. More and more people are discovering that what our founding fathers gave us, it's not the way it is anymore. You look at Washington. It's a disaster. They can't do anything. And so, to me, the only thing that's going to correct it is calling a convention of states. And I just have a couple more things, and then I will be done. Do you know that the Civil War could have been prevented? And I'll tell you why. Because the states came together to make an amendment and that to prevent the Civil War. But what they did was they sent it to Congress. They did not use Article 5 of our Constitution in order to do it. So, therefore, Congress just sat on it and didn't do anything. And so, therefore, we ended up having a Civil War. And the books that you can read that'll do this, I'll tell you about, is The Prelude to the Civil War, The Showdown in Virginia, and The Peace That Almost Was. Read those books, and you can follow it. So I'm asking you to help save our nation, save our constitutional republic and our Constitution. I'm asking you to vote yes, and I will. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any more proponent testimony? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and the committee. Thank you for having us here today. I'm Doug Post, District 7 representative, and I support this resolution. I'll defer to everybody else to get a chance to speak.
Okay, thank you. Any more proponent testimony? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm honored to be able to speak to you today. I'm Harvey Fitzgerald from District 30. I'm here to support HJR 5001. I've had 34 years of military service. I know many of you went to the military dining out last night. I was the past president of the National Guard Association. Had the honor to sit at the front table with Governor Dugard when I was in office, and I hope you enjoyed that event. We're all united in wanting to be able to defend, support, and defend our Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And in military uniform, it's very easy. They would point out who those enemies are, and they are foreign. But now that I've retired and become a citizen again, we have to think about those domestic enemies. And I've been very passionate about being able to join convention states, and I go to many different American Legions and VFW posts and speak to a lot of people. And it's a great job because 72% of the people we propose convention of states and explain the three pillars are immediately taken and are on the side of convention of states. But what I really look forward to are those other 28% that want to be able to talk with objections. And thank goodness they do, because you know what? It wasn't an easy decision for me either. We should not mess with the Constitution, which is very good, unless we know exactly what we're getting into. And that's what the people that are signing these petitions are now. They're an informed electorate. We talk about polemic versus scholarly discussions. Polemic meaning that we look at historic, we look at legal case precedents, and we examine what are these footnotes? What do they mean? What is the backing that makes this a safe and positive method to be able to assist our country? We know that God love our country, but we are on an unsustainable path. And it's one that is built on a system of seniority in Washington, and one that we take the money from the electorate and we pay it back to them in favors, which is an unsustainable model with the rate of growth that we're going at. This is not sustainable. Nobody even thinks that it would be. We need to be able to act. It's not easy for us to get here. I broke water for the cows. I'm a rancher in Buffalo Gap. Broke water for the cows yesterday, and with the weather, it's going to be no water again until we get home tonight. But I'm just thankful that we're doing government at the local level the way the Constitution intended it to be, with you folks being the face of we, the people. We need you. We ask you to consider this. We call upon you to be able to consider these polemic, these scholarly information to be able to talk about what the safeguards are. People understand it is a difficult road to be able to amend the Constitution, with the last one taking over 100 years. And thankfully, it should be difficult. And just getting through this body and your careful consideration is not an easy thing. I understand that. And thank you for being on guard for our Constitution. But it is time. We need to work together. The safeguards are there. The time is now. We ask you to support HJR 5001. Thank you.
Thank you very much. More proponent testimony.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Isaac Latterell, representing District 6. I just wanted to thank you guys, the committee, for always giving this issue such a good hearing and time to discuss what I think is a really important national conversation. One of the reasons I've been a supporter of the Convention of States movement for the most of the years that I've been up here is because of my love for my neighbors, for my love for my country. I think one of the most important powers that we have here as a state legislature is the power to enter into a national conversation with other states. And the conversation is centered around who really has the power to make the decisions in this country. And that is the thing that you heard in the previous testimony. That's the thing that can make a pathway of peace forward for our country. Our liberal friends, our conservative friends say, how about we all decide at home for ourselves how we govern our country? That's why I've been a supporter of this, and I urge you just to move this resolution forward, because it simply just continues that national conversation with the other states and says, hey, how about we talk about moving some more things back home here? Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any more proponent testimony? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, honorable members of the committee. My name is Mark Meckler. Again, I'm president of Convention of States Action, and we are the organization pushing this resolution forward all over the country. So far, 15 of your fellow states have passed this resolution. There are over 4.3 million citizens in support of this resolution across the country. And in the great state of South Dakota, I'm proud to announce that over 5,100 people have signed petitions in support of this resolution in your state. This resolution is particularly important for federalism. Most of us consider ourselves federalists. We understand that we exist within a federalist form of government, and federalism requires that the states assert themselves. You, as state legislatures, were given a unique and powerful role in the United States Constitution. You, and only you, have the power in the federal system of governance to call a convention, to propose amendments restraining federal tyranny, and to ratify those amendments. The president does not have that power. Congress does not have that power. And though the courts seem to think they do sometimes, they were not granted that power by the Constitution. I've asked myself many times, why did the founders grant you, in particular, this power? It is an extraordinary power, and if you look at our history, I think the answer why they granted you this power is pretty clear. They were you. They sat in colonial legislatures like you sit in this legislature today. They sat on town councils and county boards. And the founders trusted something. They didn't trust human nature. They didn't trust human beings, but they trusted government close to the people. They were worried about a faraway central government, and they predicted tyranny to come from the government that they were forming. They formed up this government, they provided checks and balances, and the ultimate check for federalism that they provided is found in Article 5. And I think it's important and educational how this clause we're talking about came to be. Colonel George Mason addressed the assembly 2 days before the end of the convention, and he said that there was a flaw in the document they had drafted. They had given the federal government, the Congress, the power to propose amendments, but they had not given that same power to the people acting through the states. And he said that he was concerned that no tyranny would ever propose amendments to restrain its own tyranny. I imagine they laughed. We don't have videotape, so we don't know for sure. But Madison's notes make it fairly clear that they did. His notes say nincom or no comment. There was no debate on this issue. And in fact, unanimously, the men in that convention voted to give you this extraordinary power. Today, our nation hangs in the balance. Most power is concentrated in Washington, D.C. Most state budgets are controlled somewhere at the 60% level by the federal government. This is not the government that the founders intended us to live under in South Dakota or any other state. And so that is why today the people all across this country are rising up, and they are rising up and organizing to take the power back from the federal government. I'll close with this. It's important to know the kinds of people nationally that are for and against a movement like this. On the side of this movement are luminaries like Mark Levin and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck and Ben Shapiro, constitutional scholars like Professor Randy Barnett at Georgetown, Robbie George at Princeton, John Eastman at Chapman, the greatest conservative and libertarian constitutional scholars in the land. There are no nationally known conservative figures, that have taken a position against us. And our opposition is made up of the most radical fringe of the left in America. They've signed a press release against this. Common Cause, Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, Planned Parenthood, La Raza, all have taken public stands against this. The battle lines are drawn. These are Constitution-loving Americans who like the federal system that our founders designed against statists who wish to centralize power in Washington, D.C. against the interests of the people in the states. That is why I am here in support of this resolution.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative.
Is there any more proponent testimony? Any more proponent? Okay. Seeing none, we will move on to opponent testimony. Do we have any opponent testimony? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I haven't testified in a while, so. good morning. I'm Terry Jorgensen, and giving my views as a South Dakotan and retired military officer. I am a little offended to be grouped in with the radical left. I just want to let you know that right away. I am definitely a strong proponent of the Constitution In fact, I really don't care who's on what side, because I believe that there are good people on both sides of this issue, people who love our country, and there are good arguments for and against, and I understand that. And I have spent hours looking at this issue. So I take exception to that, because there are really good people on both sides who love their country. All right, so I oppose this resolution because I believe it's fraught with political landmines. Imagine, if you will, that Congress has made the call under Article 5 for the states to convene a constitutional convention. South Dakota and conservative leading states limit their delegates to proposing amendments related to fiscal constraints, limiting federal power and term limits, while liberal states provide broad powers through their delegates to convene for the purpose of revising the federal constitution. The Maryland delegates boast this was the broad authority given to their state's delegation in the 1787 convention. Virginians, anxious to get the Second Amendment repealed, send 13 delegates. The three South Dakota delegates are having a difficult time keeping up with the changing convention landscape. They call home and are told, don't worry, it's only one vote per state, and no matter how many delegates states send. And there's always the ratification process. As the convention progresses, voting blocks form. 15 smaller states whose members are pushing to abolish the Electoral College. And by the way, this is happening real world today. There are 15 smaller states who are doing that. Align with the larger ones to propose a fairness and voting rule at the convention, arguing that states with larger populations should have more votes. Besides, Article 5 is silent about one vote per state. Could this happen? We don't know for sure. No one does. All we can do is imagine, because an Article 5 convention has never been called. We can look at the 1787 convention for clues, but that convention had one major difference. It was a convention called by the states, and Article 5 will be called by Congress. So what does it mean when it's called by Congress? I'm going to talk about three areas. One is whether or not you can limit amendments. Two, whether or not you can control delegates. And three, radical agendas at the convention. So the first is limiting amendments. Nothing in Article 5 or anywhere else in the Constitution authorizes Congress, state legislators, or anyone else to limit the agenda of an Article 5 convention. And even if they did, the Supreme Court has made clear that the process of amending the Constitution is a political question to which the courts would not intervene. Once the delegates convene, they are answerable only to themselves. So what about controlling the delegates? Proposed delegate constraining laws will not work for several reasons. First, nothing in the Constitution gives state legislators the power to control their delegates' state's delegates any more than state legislatures can control their state's members of Congress. So since delegates are part of a deliberative body, and that's what you are here, a deliberative body, and not a ratifying body, how can states control their delegates any more than they control Senator Thunes, Rounds, and Congressman Johnson? The last thing is regarding radical agendas. I don't trust that other state legislators are going to act in the best interest of our Bill of Rights. Take the Virginia General Assembly legislators who today, are assaulting the Second Amendment freedoms of their residents. Let's talk about New York. What did New York do? They passed a radical late-term abortion bill, and then they celebrated when it passed by lighting up the Empire State Building in pink. They will also be delegates to such a convention. So those are some of the radical agendas that might come out of such a convention. But let's look at ratification. And let's say that the Article 5 ratification, which is three-fourths votes of the several states, let's say that that stays intact. It also clearly states that Congress determines whether ratification takes place in the state legislatures or by state conventions. I noticed in this resolution that you want it to take place in the state legislature. Actually, in preserving the Second Amendment, if Virginia has their way, at a state of conventions and it comes out and the repealing the Second Amendment is on that, I want it to go to the people at a state convention, because the people of Virginia are now rising up against their state legislature because they want to preserve their Second Amendment. So it will matter where Congress places the ratification process, whether it's in the state legislatures or whether it's in conventions. Ultimately, I oppose an Article 5 convention because it's not courage I lack, and I've been accused of that, but it's wisdom I desire in not walking across a constitutional convention landscape littered with landmines. And I believe we all love this great country on both sides. And I stand shoulder to shoulder a lot of times with the people who are proponents of this. So thank you. I know that you will deliberate fairly, and I appreciate your time. And I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you very much. Is there any more proponent testimony? Opponent, excuse me. I apologize. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Kitty Worthman. I'm president of South Dakota Eagle Forum. We oppose this resolution because there's a great risk. Should there be a convention, we fear we lose the Second Amendment, the Electoral College, then we get the popular vote. That's what they really want. On a personal note, last year, I was being harassed by the lobbyist of the Convention of State. Somebody called security, and security told me that if he should bother me again, I should let them know.
We're here to discuss the resolution. Please stay on. Stay on task. Thank you.
We oppose this resolution because of the risk it would take. Respectfully, I ask for a no vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further opponent testimony?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Linda Schauer, Concerned Women for America, LAC. All that needs to be done to achieve the goals that this resolution requests is to obey the Constitution, which already provides for restraint and accountability. Lawmakers are out of compliance with the Constitution and its limited powers as enumerated in Article 1, Section 8. You know, it's pie in the sky to believe that lawmakers will obey another amendment when they already ignore the Constitution, which they took an oath to support. The founders plainly affirmed that Article 5 was for fixing defects and errors in the Constitution. I ask, what defects in the Constitution have led to our national debt or a massive expansion of power and jurisdiction of the federal government? Amendments proposed by a mock convention in 2016 at Williamsburg and also Mark Lemon's Liberty Amendments actually recklessly expand federal power by legalizing the unconstitutional practices the federal government has usurped. Former Chief Justice Warren Burger said, quote, "There is no effective way to limit or muzzle the actions of a constitutional convention. The convention can make its own rules and set its own agenda. After a convention is convened, it will be too late to stop the convention if we don't like the agenda." The Declaration of Independence states that people have a right to alter or abolish our form of government. That's the justification our founders gave for abolishing the Articles of Confederation and adopting our current Constitution. I wouldn't trust today's political climate and wealthy power seekers to scrapping our foundational document and drafting a new one strikingly different from the brilliant one we have today and impose a more lenient ratification process like they did in 1787. At the Convention of States rally held in the Capitol a couple weeks ago, I noticed these words on their signs, quote, "Put the states back in charge," unquote, and, quote, "Article 5 gives states the power to call a convention of states to propose amendments," unquote. None of these statements are true.
Article 5 clearly asserts that the states apply for a convention, which this resolution attempts to do. Article 5 further states that Congress calls the convention, not the states. Other ratification, other than the ratification process, either by state legislatures or state conventions, the state's only part is to apply. I respectfully ask your no vote on HJR 5001.
Thank you very much. Do we have any more opponent testimony? Good morning.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Committee. My name is Michael Boyle. I'm a pastor over in Parkston, South Dakota, and I just want to say I do love our Constitution, and I do love my neighbors. I'm sure all of you do, too. The reason I oppose this measure is not because of a lack of those things, but a desire to preserve the Constitution that we have. You know, we just went through a constitutional exercise in Congress where they wanted to impeach the president. And I heard many times, you know, if we support the founding fathers, if we support the Constitution, you know, the House managers told us we must impeach the president. But one of the things I was struck by, we heard today that, you know, we know what's going to happen here. But in that constitutional exercise where we tried to impeach the president, one of the things that was discussed was, does the president even have to break a law in order to impeach him? There's a lot of things about impeaching the president that, although it seems very clear-cut, is very much up in the air. There's a lot of legal or scholarly opinions that, you know, you can fall on one side or the other. And it's the same with this issue as well. One state, one vote, that's a legal opinion. We've never done it before. Every single decision that we've made since we passed the Constitution has been according to the Electoral College model. Even state compacts have to be approved by Congress according to the Electoral College model. So there's legal opinions on both sides, but the reality is we don't know. And to state that, you know, is just as we saw in this exercise of impeachment, it just doesn't bear out to be a fact. So I would encourage a no vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any further opponent testimony? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Here we are again, aren't we? Again. You know, I'm called up annually, thanks to the Convention of States lobby. I'm called up annually to protect and defend my Constitution. You know, it's my duty to do that. Actually, it's my privilege.
Excuse me, did you say your name?
David Johnson.
Thank you. Appreciate
District
that.
District 33 representative. I was just getting to the good part. No. It is, indeed. It's my privilege to come here once again to stand up and defend the law of the land. I'm here in what has become an annual defense, over and over. I want to know, and I want you to ask, what is it about this, the Convention of States lobby, this very, very powerful, heavily, millions of dollars funded lobby from Virginia? What is it about the Constitution that they want to change? What's wrong with our Constitution? You know, I agree that the feds need to be reined in. But as stated earlier, they're already ignoring the Constitution. What good is it going to do to change the Constitution? You know, what we have to do is enforce our existing Constitution. An earlier proponent spoke of a stack of papers this tall and said, that's our Constitution. That's not our Constitution. That is the result of the abuse of our Constitution. This is the Constitution. This is it. What's wrong with it? Let's ask the Convention of States lobbyists to be specific. What is it about this precious document that they want to change? Let's rein in the federal government by enforcing the existing Constitution. I've introduced recently House Bill 1261. This is the alternative we've been looking for. This gives our legislature, you and I as legislators, the power to rein in the federal government, to enforce the Constitution without subjecting our Constitution to some unknown results of some national constitutional convention. Give it a look. Please just look at it. And I know that we now have an alternative plan, something that we should at least discuss. And it's something that remains within our chambers. It's something that allows us to do what we can do as a state, a sovereign state, to enforce the Constitution. Something was mentioned earlier I took offense to. Speaker mentioned that Planned Parenthood is opposed to this resolution. So I guess we are to assume that if you are opposed to this resolution, then you must be a supporter of Planned Parenthood. That is offensive. And I would prefer that you overlook that little detail. Some people say, well, Article 5, because it's there, that's why we should use it. The Founding Fathers put Article 5 in the Constitution for one reason, and that is to change flaws. James Madison, the author, one of the authors of the Constitution, wrote in Federalist Number 43 that Article 5 of the Constitution is for repairing, quote, discovered constitutional faults, quote, for the amendment of constitutional errors. What's wrong with my Constitution? What's wrong with your Constitution? Specifically, Convention of States lobby, specifically, please go to my Constitution and tell me what's wrong with it. Now, if your concern is a balanced budget, there's already a CONCON application on file in South Dakota for the balanced budget amendment. Do you think we need another one? How about term limits? Well, isn't that something that the people of South Dakota exercise at every election? Let's enforce the Constitution. Let's enforce it. Let's keep it like this. Let's not change it. Please reject this attack on our Constitution. Please vote no on this resolution, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. With that, the time is up, and so we will open it up for a rebuttal.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mark Meckler, President of Convention of States Action. Many misstatements of fact and truth have been made that I feel necessary to correct. I think people who've made them make them in good faith. I think everybody who comes before this committee is acting in faith. That's a presumption we can start with. I'd like to deal with some of the things that Representative Johnson just said. With all due respect, he's clearly an expert in this chamber and clearly lacks an understanding of how our federal system of governance works. He showed you a pocket constitution and said, this is our constitution. And while I agree with him, this is the constitution as drafted by the founders with the Bill of Rights. The way our system of government works since Marbury versus Madison is that the Supreme Court is, unfortunately, in my opinion, the ultimate arbiter of what the constitution means. The constitution we live under is, unfortunately, in my opinion, only the Constitution as interpreted by the United States Supreme Court. This is that Constitution. And so while Mr. Johnson may not recognize this as reality, unfortunately, if you order the Constitution of the United States from the federal government, if you want to know what they believe the Constitution is, what their authority is, it comes from this book. It's over 2,700 pages as of 2012. Today, it's over 3,000 pages with all the addendums added to it, all the case law added to it. The things that take away the power of South Dakotans are in this Constitution. There are a line of cases, primarily I would point to the Commerce Clause cases, expanding federal government authority and taking away your authority. So we have to deal with the reality that, unfortunately, the Supreme Court has given us this. And the founders gave us a remedy if we don't like what the Supreme Court did. It's in this one that Representative Johnson likes and that we all love. And it's in Article 5, and it gives us the power to take this back to this. That's what we're trying to do. I also heard somebody today at length quote Chief Justice Warren Burger. Warren Burger warned us of a runaway convention. By the way, the first person in American history to use that term. We have to ask ourselves, well, who was Warren Burger? And I think it's important that we note Warren Burger and his place in American jurisprudential history. Warren Burger was a liberal activist justice, Supreme Court justice, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. He was the presiding justice over Roe versus Wade. I think one of the most egregious abuses of federal judicial power in American history. And he was being asked this question at a time when states all across the country were proposing Article 5 resolutions to overturn Roe versus Wade. What is that Chief Justice likely to say in response to the question, should we hold such a convention? Of course, a liberal activist jurist who gave us Roe versus Wade was openly opposed to a convention to overturn Roe versus Wade. And it surprises me, to be honest with you, to hear good conservatives, and I believe they are good conservatives, quoting Chief Justice Warren Burger. No good conservative should ever do that. I think the most important thing that I have to rebut is the idea that somehow the founders didn't know what they were doing when they put Article 5 in the Constitution. They were very clear. They said at convention, the idea was to have a check against federal tyranny. This is not just about governance. This is about human nature. Human beings naturally accrue power to themselves. And the more power they have, the more power they want. I think we can generalize that about human beings. We are flawed creatures. And so today, what we're asking you to do is exercise the power that you have, that the founders gave you, to push back against an overreaching federal government. And I'll close with this. The opponents to this resolution talk often of, this is scary, this is dangerous, we should be worried about this. But they do agree with us on one thing. We all agree on one thing. The federal government is entirely out of control, and it will not rein itself in. And my question to you and our opponents is, if it will not rein itself in, then what should we do? And what you will never hear, and you did not hear today from the opponents, and I have never heard from any of our opponents in hundreds of hours of testimony all over the country, is what they propose we do to rein in a runaway federal government. I can tell you 4.3 million people across this country and over 5,000 South Dakotans say, we must use Article 5 now to rein in that runaway federal government. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, I will open it up to committee questions. Any committee questions? Okay, seeing none. I have told both sides that we will not vote on this today because the speaker had to go to the funeral of his brother-in-law, and he wants to very much be a part of the vote. And so we will have discussion and vote on Monday, first thing, when we have state affairs. So both sides, I've told that when we came in, so they were made aware of that. So that's the way that will be handled. So with that, if there's no questions, nothing else, I will, we come to the end of our committee. I will entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Hansen, seconded by Dietrich. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. We are adjourned.